Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham flick, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio, and if you can't tell by the tone of my voice, we are about to talk about our game against Man United. Leading us off, we have, you know, the most important member of the podcast, the guy who's been here the longest, Brian. Brian, how are you doing tonight? Are you excited to talk about this game?
I'm here, aren't I?
More apt words have never been spoken. Next up, we have, you know, just another vital cog in our podcast. It's our evil numbers wizard, Michael Cayley. Michael, I don't know. Are the numbers as boring as this game?
I mean, yeah, they're like four. Four is a crappy number, right? How you doing, Greg?
Thank you, Michael. No one ever asks how I'm doing. I don't know.
I literally asked you how you were doing last week.
Who are you? Who's this?
Brett Rainbow.
Who's this, though?
He hasn't been introduced yet. He can't talk.
No. You're not allowed to speak. I'm doing fine, Michael. Thank you for asking. I wish I had a better game to talk about tonight. I started my new job today. Took pictures of a cat. That was something. And then I guess we have Ben. Hi, Ben. Okay, so let's talk about this game. Tottenham Hotspur lost to Manchester United. It was very boring. How bad should we feel about this performance, Michael?
I wouldn't say that bad. I mean, you know, the Manchester United are good. I wasn't on the podcast like last week to put this argument forward, but I think it was pretty clear from this game that like that's a good football team, and a team that has Ander Herrera and Paul Pogba in midfield is going to be a very good midfield team. They handled Dembele better than just and they you know, they handled Dembele very well. You know, Mkhitaryan and Martial do a lot of defensive work, which made Eriksen's job difficult. Like, they played a very strong game, and they got a solid win. And they still could have blown it if Wanyama hadn't, you know, done whatever the fuck he did with that header.
Or if Harry Kane doesn't lay a lazy hospital ball across the middle of our midfield. How much – Spurs looked fairly toothless in this game, Brian. How much of that do you think was – Spurs issue, because we have had not our attack hasn't exactly been firing this year. How much of that do you think is Spurs, and how much do you think is United's defense?
Well, I don't think United's defense is particularly good, but I think Michael is correct in that, you know, they were able to stifle us in midfield pretty well with Pogba and Herrera and Carrick. Former Tottenham Hotspur midfielder Michael Carrick. I think, you know, when Dembele is not able to advance the ball by dribbling, or when he has a more difficult time, we had to resort to kind of skipping over the midfield with long passes out of the back. And with Toby back, that actually worked some of the time, but all three of our attacking midfielders kind of conspired to have lackluster performances all at the same time. And it resulted in us looking really toothless. And so I don't put as much of it on, you know, Marcus Rojo and the rest of the Manchester United defense so much as it was on the midfield, and then how Spurs were kind of programmed to react to the midfield pressure that United were able to apply.
Ben, you have anything to say about the game?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Brian, what do you think? Ben, do you have something to say about the game?
Too late. He was moving on to me.
I just didn't know if you wanted to introduce me first.
So Ben, we all get the introductions we deserve on this podcast. So
that's true. That's why nobody introduces you.
Exactly. Exactly.
I think Brian is doing a bit of a disservice to the center backs. I thought Marcus Rojo in particular had a very good game. Harry Kane had a very
on shirts, by the way, but no one ever gets called for that.
So. That happens.
I mean, it does, but it was particularly egregious in this match, I thought.
But, you know, I think everybody noticed that Harry Kane had a rather poor game. And I think, you know, a lot of that was due to our attack. But I think the center backs did a really good job keeping Kane out of the game. And Marcus Rojo in particular, whenever Kane got the ball, seemed to be up his ass and forced him backwards and sideways and didn't really let him, you know, kind of draw out our attack into, like, the final third. You know, he stopped a lot of our runs and a lot of our counters early in a way that was surprising because Marcus Rojo generally sucks, and that was frustrating. But yeah, other than that, you know, like Michael said, it was a midfield game that we lost. You know, Dembele did well-ish. You know, saw him against Conte and Matic just a couple of weeks ago, and put in a very, very different performance against two very strong midfielders. This was a little quieter. I mean, he still managed to hold the ball for the most part, not turn it over, but he wasn't able to be as progressive through midfield. And, you know, we really, really rely on that. And, you know, neither he or Wanyama have the passing ability to compensate when we can't get that going.
And the thing that I kind of noticed is, you know, we in this match, we saw Dele Alli kind of dropping back more to contribute in midfield, where in the past, where when we found it difficult in midfield, it was more often Christian Eriksen coming back into deeper positions to help pick up the passing slack. And Dele Alli really doesn't offer that passing ability that Eriksen does. And it just kind of stalled the attack because, one, you didn't have Dele Alli getting into dangerous positions off the striker, and then two, you just didn't have any sort of progressive passing coming out of our midfield.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Like, I think Dele Alli tries to do the same kind of things on the ball from those deep positions as Dembele is. He wants to drive forward, play a couple 1-2s. But again, you know, when you have Herrera, Pogba, and to a lesser extent Carrick patrolling that midfield, that's harder. And he just ended up being a redundant presence. And I think on Pochettino, the reason for that was we had Christian Eriksen playing on the right against Swansea to devastating effect. He had a really, really good game. He was really involved, really present. And we rolled that out again. We had Son on the left, Eriksen on the right, and Dele Alli in the middle, instead of something that allowed Eriksen to be more central. And against a team like Swansea that plays, you know, no midfield and includes a kid like Jay Fulton, who is a terrible youth player, you know, against a team like United, we really, really could have used Eriksen being more present in midfield and distributing the ball from that deeper position because he's better at it. And that seemed like a weird Pochettino not realizing that the thing that worked against Swansea wasn't going to be the best tactic against Manchester United. And that was a little frustrating.
So you look at this game, and I think you could say that taken in isolation, it's not a hugely problematic performance from Spurs. But it's just another game where we have not had enough going forward. And I know that if you want to look at the year in total, there's been a lot of injuries. We've run up against some good teams. United certainly has been, if nothing else this year, been able to have put a solid defense together. But the fact of the matter is we're just not scoring on teams like we were last year. I mean, is this a problem that's going to fix itself at this point, Michael? Or do you think this is an ongoing issue with like how teams are approaching us this year in a way that they weren't last year? I mean, what's going on with Spurs? Is it just a simple matter as we need to get healthy and sort of get our groove back, or do we have to figure out a different way to play?
I don't know. I feel a bit like this is, I think there's something very much to this, but I would also want to dispute the premise of the question because that's what I do.
Okay.
Spurs scored 8 goals between their midweek game and their game the day before, on like 7 expected goals. You know, our performance against CSKA and Swansea were two of our best attacking performances of the season. CSKA and Swansea are bad, but there's a couple of bad teams in the Premier League, and like there's no question that Spurs have
Spurs attack is relatively limited compared to the five best teams in the Premier League. But I'm not sure I'm sold that Spurs attack, when it's relatively healthy, is bad because we struggled to put much together against Chelsea United on the road. I think that even last year, the reason Spurs were so good when we were at our best, we had a lot of frustrating games. We had a lot of games where we got the one breakthrough chance, or we got one or two breakthrough chances and converted them. It's going to be tough for us to win a title with this kind of attack, but I don't see like a major crisis issue here, if that makes sense.
Well, it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't seem like a crisis. I guess it's only a crisis if we're talking about like qualifying for the, like, we're not going to qualify for the Champions League, which, you know, I think is still within. It's going to be hard, but that's still certainly on the table for Spurs at this point, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're obviously behind, and the best four or five teams in the Premier League are much better than they were last year. But Spurs have every opportunity to roll off a bunch of points against mediocre teams. They've got five games coming up. The best team they face is Southampton, who are a good team. But, like, that's the one particularly tough game in our next five. Spurs should be able to pick up a lot of points, and it's going to be a real test. It's going to be a real test of this attack. See if this team now with players healthy and facing teams that are not among the best in the Premier League can create the chances they need to win games.
And it's worth pointing out is, like, because I think there was a lot of sort of despair floating around Spurs social media after that game against United. I mean, we're not the only team to be hitting road bumps lately. I mean, Liverpool's finally, you know, not getting some of the results they were getting earlier in the year. City have certainly, you know, I think that City have not had the results they would want lately. I mean, these teams, I think, are in better situations than us even then, but, you know, we can still put it together. I mean, Ben, is this – you're our resident Pochettino out advocate on this podcast. I mean, how much of this do you put on him, and how much do you put this on circumstance?
Okay, so – while I think Pochettino is obviously the worst manager to grace White Hart Lane in 30 years, you know, his system is his system, right? And so it works the way it works. So it's all on Pochettino. But I don't think, you know, that means what Pochettino is doing is bad. It's just, this is what Pochettino's system is, and this is how Pochettino's system works. You know, the primary method for creating chances is through a high press. And when it works really, really well. And when it doesn't work, you know, we struggle. And, you know, on balance, that's a good system, and that is, you know, a good way to make a team like Spurs compete with, you know, better teams with more money and more resources and more expensive players. So, you know, I don't know. You're asking a weird question. So, yes, it's on Pochettino, but it's not a criticism of Pochettino. It's just sort of the nature of the beast. You know, there are things we could be doing better. You know, we obviously miss a guy like Eric Lamela, who contributes a lot to the press in a way that Dele Alli maybe doesn't, and, you know, even Son sometimes doesn't. Sometimes it felt like Christian Eriksen was like a one-man pressing unit out there against United, and that's just never going to work for us. You know, I mean, there was the big lineup question ahead of the match was Wanyama versus Dier. You know, it was the only, like, reasonable question between first-team players, and I think Pochettino got that wrong. You know, it was a game that had we had a little more control over midfield, that whole system maybe holds together a little better than it did. You know, Dier is a much more positionally sound. He's stronger on the ball, passing and holding the ball. You know, Wanyama is good at driving forward, but like we've already beaten into the ground, that was a thing that wasn't working. So when you have both Dembele and Wanyama incapable of progressing the ball in their favored way, you know, a guy like Dyer would have been a better option. And, you know, we saw the return of Toby Alderweireld, who we missed greatly. He contributed a lot to our attack in a way that we've been missing. And, you know, you could feel in certain moments that, like, things were working, but it's just, it's not all there yet. And so to the question of circumstance, you know, we haven't had a fully fit first choice 11 in a really long time. And, you know, those circumstances are certainly impeding our attack from clicking to the degree that we know it can under Pochettino. So, you know, I don't think anything is like cause for alarm. It's just more cause for frustration that until everything is working systematically again, you know, we're probably not going to be that good.
I guess for me, one of the things that's most frustrating about this team right now is I would imagine with the players we have at our disposal, we should be able to absorb as good as Eric Lamela is. Like, you know, I think Vince on our site's called him a walking through ball, and he certainly offers a lot defensively. I feel like with Son, with Eriksen, with Dele Alli, with, you know, with being able to switch out Dyer and Wanyama in midfield, we should be able to cover for that better than we have been. I mean,
we do, like, you know, we had a lot of players out for injury, you know, and against Swansea, we were still without Lamela, we were without Toby, we were without Dyer in midfield, and we put away 5 goals. Like, we are good against a good team, but when you are against bad teams, like, you know, that can still work, and we've seen it work. But when you're playing a team like Manchester United, who is at least as good as we are, you need those little edges, and we didn't have that.
The edges of Eric's elbows, yeah, is what you mean.
Right. We needed, you know, those sharp points jabbing into the brainstem of various United players. And it obviously didn't help that, you know, Jose Mourinho picked this week to finally roll out a good lineup and drop guys like, you know, Lingard and Fellaini and, you know, a bunch of assholes and play Martial and Mkhitaryan for the first time all season. You know, like, if we had played United a month ago, even in our bad patch of form, even with injuries, you know, it would have been a different equation on the field. So they kind of were playing the best version of what they are going to be able to put out this season. You know, they've dropped Wayne Rooney, so automatically that makes them 10 times better than they had been. And we were just missing, you know, those key guys. And so in a game like that, like, it's fine margins that we're operating on, and we needed it. But, you know, I mean, even Sissoko managed to look good in this game. So the idea that our team, you know, with injuries isn't capable of competing with anybody just isn't true.
Ben, my audio cut out. Do you want to repeat that? Who looked good in the game?
Ryan Mason?
No. I think he said someone else.
Yeah, the French Ryan Mason.
Yeah,
okay. I could not disagree more about Sissoko. He looked good and won a corner like in the first 10 minutes he was on the field, and then after that he just looked tired.
So he looked way better than he's looked for us so far.
Yeah,
he wasn't great. Like, I'm not gonna pretend that, like, oh, we got the Moussa Sissoko we thought we were buying. Like, we didn't.
And this is damn faint praise. Like, you could at least see. Yeah, you could at least see what they were thinking on some level, even if,
right. I don't know.
Was,
I mean,
like,
I,
some level I, of use for him. Like, he dribbled past Darmian like 100 times. He had more touches in 30 minutes than Heung-Min Son did all game. You know, he was just involved and contributed in a way that was, if not great, at least, like, not a detriment to the team. I'll take that.
I just feel like if you had used that sub right there, the 57th minute sub on Nkudu instead of Sissoko, then maybe something would have actually happened. Because my problem with Sissoko is that, like, as good or as, you know, above average as he was or whatever, I still don't see any indication that there's any end product. Like, even when he was dribbling past Darmian, the best thing he did was bounce across off of somebody to get a corner. Like, I don't recall him putting in a single dangerous ball, and he's certainly not a threat to shoot. So, I mean, if that's what we want, then, you know, someone to get down the outside and put in crosses, like, if that's what we're resorting to, I'd almost rather it be Enkudu, because I just have some weird level of faith that he can do something dangerous as opposed to just put in like a workmanlike shift like Sissoko did.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to overstate Sissoko's performance, and I agree that Enkudu is better, but the question that was presented was, is our squad so terrible without our first choice? And I was just making the point that even Sissoko managed to look functional. I think even with Sissoko, I think tactically, like if you move him into midfield to give us that third man, like that might have been better. Enkudu might have been better. But like, the idea that we're like completely helpless without everybody, I think, isn't strictly true. Like we're certainly better with our starters, but like we have options and we have guys who we'll come up in games like this where we can't do it, but we should be better than our recent results have suggested. And I think we're kind of getting to that place where I don't like cringe when I'm like, when I see the fact that Harry Winks or Enkudu or Sissoko are coming on in a way that maybe I had a couple weeks ago.
Maybe that's overly. Why would you ever cringe when Harry Winks is coming on?
Well, it's more because Dembele was coming off, I guess, than anything. Harry Winks is perfect.
I mean, yes, obviously. I mean, there's nothing wrong with Harry Winks. He's a beautiful freckled man.
The point is this game was not super cause for concern. If anything was a cause for concern about this game, it was Pochettino's lineup rotation issues and why did we play a full strength side against Cesca and not against Monaco?
Well, because obviously we want to qualify for the group stage of the we want to get out of the group stage of the Champions League, Ben. Come on. Use your head here. It's obvious. I mean, it's clear. Michael, how inexcusable was Wanyama's miss? I generally try to be generous towards missed headers because heading a ball is hard, but boy, you got to put that one away.
I guess I feel like if that had been, if that had been Harry Kane or if that had been Toby Alderweireld, we would have been like, oh, fuck. But because it was Wanyama, who already probably shouldn't have been on the field, when we have Eric Dier, who does a better job and is a better fit for this kind of opponent, and he's already having a relatively poor game, struggling in the air, not completing as many simple passes as he usually does, for him also to blow the one big chance that we got is very frustrating. And that's the other thing I would say about the game is that one of the things that United did, and this is such a Mourinho thing to do, is they were very good at committing fouls when they needed to stop our attacks. When we were able to press and we were able to move forward, we would get fouled. And because of that, we had a bunch of set plays. Our best chances were those two Eriksen free kicks that De Gea saved, and the one time we managed to make our set piece routine work. And so it's particularly important to execute in those moments because of that was what we were getting. So I think the combination, it's not that like missing a free header on a set piece is even missing it sort of embarrassingly badly is inexcusable. It's that in the context of a game where we knew that was what we needed and where Wanyama was already, at least for me, under the microscope, because I didn't think he should have been starting in the first place and he was having a poor game, that made it bad.
I think you kind of glossed over it, but the egregious nature of that miss also did not help. Like, at the very least, put it over, force a save, do something. If his target was the ground, then good job, Wanyama, you're amazing. But, I mean, that was just a particularly atrocious header.
Well, the thing that was weird about the whole situation to me was that we'd been kind of setting up that specific set-piece play all throughout the game. And all throughout the game, it had been Wanyama kind of at the back of that defensive line that was making that run to get into that position. And it just struck me as very odd. Like, if that is Eric Dier that is in the lineup and that's who you're aiming for, then fine. But I didn't understand why that wasn't Toby Alderweireld or Jan Vertonghen or Harry Kane or someone else who, I don't know, maybe anybody had a little more faith in putting a header on frame.
So let me tell you something about game theory, Brian.
No. This podcast is a safe place.
They expect to see Toby Alderweireld at the back post, right? But you have certain pieces on the board, and you got to arrange them in a certain way. You know, when you deceptively slide in Wanyama as the dangerous target who nobody expects, that's some masterful three-dimensional chess that Pochettino is playing.
I would have preferred Kyle Walker or Danny Rose or literally anyone other than Victor Wanyama at the back of that line.
Well, Wanyama has scored a header before, so.
One header ever, yeah.
I'm just saying.
Probably. Really, we're not even sure.
With the numbers.
God, this game was so dreadful and boring. I know we basically played well, but it was just, I don't know. I would like to feel good about watching Spurs after a match again. And it just feels like, I know we just whipped the shit out of two teams the last 2 weeks, but before that, it felt like a real long time.
I mean, I really want to say, like, feeling bad about this game, like, I get it, but, like, don't. Like,
no, you're right. It's logically, I understand that.
You know, I think last season kind of skewed our perception of, like, what this league looks like a little bit, where, you know, we either beat or hung with or, like, you know, dominated and were unfortunate to lose against every good team in the league, every big team. Like, we beat Man City. We beat everybody. We were good, and everything was great. Like, this season is much harder. The good teams are much better. You know, and we're not one of the best two teams in the league this season. We're fifth or sixth. And so playing a good game but not a great game against United and Chelsea, like, it's, you know, you don't want that to be what happens, but, like, it's not the kind of thing that, like, we could leave the ground, like, with our heads held high. Like, it was a fine performance. Mm-hmm. I mean, they created one really good chance from, you know, a shitty back pass, and they scored it. Like, it wasn't like we got our asses kicked by Man United. It was just not ideal, and that's frustrating.
Well, I think if there's something to be frustrated about, it's we were chasing the game at the end. We just didn't look like we were creating anything, and a lot of that has to do with United shutting up shop. But
yeah, I mean, people forget that, like, there are two teams on the pitch,
and, like, you're chasing a game against a Jose Mourinho team.
Yeah,
exactly. I get that. I get that.
Like, you know, they scored, they shut up shop. Like, that's what Jose does. You know, against Everton, they gave away a last minute penalty. We didn't get that break. But it's hard. You know, we looked much worse in games against, like, West Brom and Bournemouth earlier in the season.
No, Bournemouth, like, we scored late, so
be mad about those.
against West Brom, rather, not Bournemouth. But yes, those games are much more troubling than this game. Like, it's just
right.
I think I'd feel a lot better. And again, I know this is just we're talking about Greg's fifis, not, like, Spurs' actual talent or whatever. If they could just rattle off a couple, like, a month's worth of good wins or good performances, it would make me feel better, which is really what's important here.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because it's like, you know, we had that soft stretch of games where we didn't capitalize. And so now that the good teams are,
yeah,
you know,
our injuries really, schedule, really took, like, to us.
Right, but it's like, you know, you only get so many of those stretches where you're playing against teams that you should just whip ass on. And like Michael said, like, our next five games, you know, Southampton's the best team we face. You know, hopefully we'll put together, you know, a good run. The last time we had that good, favorable run of fixtures, we sucked. And so, you know, every so often you'll hit a stretch in the fixture list where you have an easy game and then you have a hard game. You have a couple easy games and then it's United and then it's Chelsea. And, you know, like, it's hard to put together a rhythm in times like these. And the biggest problem, again, like, if we had strung off, you know, 3-4 wins after Man City, you know, a drop point here at Chelsea and United is, like, contextually feels a lot better. It's like, okay, you know, we fought well. You know, we're picking up the points where we should. These things happen. And it's a lot harder to accept those when we're not picking up the points against the teams that we should. So, you know, all we can hope for now is to just go on in our next five games and, you know, try to pick up 15 points, try to pick up you know, as much as we can and put together a run that, you know, gives the team confidence, gives the fans confidence in the team. You know, I think that will improve the atmosphere in Spurs fandom, I think, significantly. You know, if we don't, that's when you panic.
Yeah, and I hesitate to, like I'm joking about my feelings, and I mean, some of this is just being in the echo chamber of social media and talking to each other about Spurs and having that issue of, you know, like we all, like just the visceral impact of losing that game was not fun. And, you know, some of the frustrations we've had this year, and I think it magnifies what, you know, is a slightly subpar or slightly below our expectations Spurs team, as opposed to, you know, a total fucking disaster, which is what it feels like sometimes when everyone's moaning and yelling and, you know, rending their garments on Twitter or whatever. And, I mean, the Christmas break could be the perfect cure for that. I mean, Brian, would it, I mean, does it, if Spurs just whip ass on these teams for, as Ben would say, for, you know, a month here, I mean, is that going to tell us anything different about this team other than, oh, well, maybe they just need to get healthy and play some bad teams?
No. I mean, playing bad teams is great. Winning against bad teams is also great. I would say that that's kind of been Spurs' bugaboo for, I don't know, what, the last ever? You know, I mean, you know, losing 5-1 to Newcastle, or, you know, just all the results earlier in October this year. We have to beat the teams that we're supposed to beat. And December is a perfect time for us to just go out there and get the job done and, you know, get into a good position for the next time we play Chelsea, which is like right after the new year.
That always works out well for us.
Yeah, it's going to be super. It's going to be amazing. Yeah,
5-2. Book it.
Yeah. So, you know, like Ben and Michael have said, you know, we have some winnable fixtures. We should be looking to take, you know, at least 12, if not more, points from these matches. And, you know, maybe we get healthy. Maybe Eric Lamella isn't, you know, Bo Jackson, and we'll be fine. Maybe it'll be okay.
So let's look ahead. We've talked a little bit about Spurs Christmas period coming up. I want to talk about January. I mean, Michael, looking at Spurs right now, looking at the transfer window, within reason, what could Spurs use in the transfer window, and what do you think we're actually going to do?
Oh, we're going to do nothing.
You don't think we're going to do anything? You don't think there's some small fringy moves we could? We'll maybe get a right-footed center back? Or now that we're in the Europa League, who gives a shit? Like,
yeah, I mean, there are places this team could upgrade, like, you know, but they're all places that we could have upgraded in the winter and we didn't. And I don't think it was because, and it wasn't because, you know, we could definitely use a right back who isn't a backup right back who isn't Kieran Trippier. We could definitely use a backup striker who can play in the Premier League. We could definitely use, as you say, a backup center back who's right footed, who isn't Eric Dier. But we can also back up our right-footed center back with Eric Dier and continue using Kieran Trippier against bad teams and continue hoping that either Harry Kane never gets injured or Vincent Janssen is suddenly going to turn into a good player that resembles his numbers from the Eredivisie. I don't see Spurs giving up on any of those plans.
And so frankly, none of that is
sinable. None of those ideas are completely crazy, except for the fact that Kieran Trippier is bad. And he shouldn't be our right back.
He doesn't
fit our team. He doesn't fit our tactics. We're not going to buy a right back to be our backup in case Kyle Walker gets injured or play in the Europa League. Like, we're not going to do anything.
Right. Kyle Walker, by the way, has been, I would say, our player of the season. So right back is probably a very low priority for Pochettino right now.
If there's anyone who I think would be competing with him for player of the season, I think it's Danny Rose. I mean,
but, I mean, neither of our backup fullbacks are, like, ideal for our tactics.
Davies is fine. Like,
no, he's fine as a player, but he's a departure from how we like to play with our fullbacks. Right. I mean, he's still also relatively young, but he's never going to be the kind of speed merchant threat, you know, on the overlap that Danny Rose is.
I don't know if that's as I mean, it's
you know, I'm not saying that's to his detriment or anything, but he is very much a different option than what Danny Rose is. And when he, like, when we are in the Europa League and we play both him and Trippier, our attack from our fullbacks is considerably worse because neither of them are that great.
I mean,
yeah. I mean, Davis is much less of a problem than Trippier. Like, he's a fine backup, whereas Trippier is a catastrophe. But it's still like
Davis,
like
gives
said,
you something going forward. It's not the same thing as Rose. It's not as good as Rose.
But it is a when you have like a stable of attacking midfielders, the idea of like you have somebody who gives you a different look, like in Kudu, like that's a good thing. When you're talking about your fullbacks who in this system need to play a certain way and they just fundamentally can't do it, you're just have to change the way you play or just suffer for it. And that's what we do. Davis is fine. He defends well. When he gets involved in the attack, he's a contributor. But he is not the same kind of player that Danny Rose is. And that makes us worse because our system is dependent on pieces playing certain roles. And it's just a different role.
Michael's exactly right. And Pochettino has said as much. We're not going to do anything in January. And
Let's change that question then. Brian, if you could pick one, like within reason, so let's not talk about signing Lionel Messi or anything, but if you could pick up one player for Spurs.
Piece of shit.
That too. Well, London's not a tax haven, so that he wouldn't come to Spurs anyway. But if you could pick one player to come to, so that Spurs could like pursue within, like I said, keep it rational, who would you go get?
The defensive midfielder from Ajax, Richedly Bezor, however I say his name, I've totally butchered it.
That's a good quick pull, by the way. You're probably making him up. Just like
he's a real Ajax player. He's a real person that exists. The manager of Ajax has already acknowledged that he is leaving, either in January or, in the summer. He's kind of a deep-lying playmaker sort of midfielder. He is a different kind of midfielder than anything we have, but he is also, a very athletic kind of box-to-box. He can fill a lot of roles in the midfield, and he's versatile in a way that I don't think a lot of our other midfielders, other than perhaps Dembele, are. And I think the best way to improve Spurs is to really improve our midfield. And, I know Pochettino is kind of married to this 4-2-3-1, which includes Eric Dier and Moussa Dembele. But I think a midfield that would include, I'm not going to try to pronounce his name again, him and also Dembele would be an upgrade over that.
Ben, within reason, who would you try to bring in?
I don't know. I don't have a name at
just,
my fingertips.
Just make up a player who plays for PSV. But just make someone up.
Or whatever is reportedly on the move for 12 million euros. He is very much for sale. So that's a good shout. But, we already have Harry Winks. And I think Harry Winks is a good player. So, we're not going to upgrade Wanyama, which I would prefer our midfield move to be. So at this point, I think giving Winks a chance and seeing what he's capable of, like, is something I'm fine with.
How would you feel about what's his name from Real Madrid?
Isco?
Yes, Isco. That's the one I'm thinking of.
I love Isco. James is also on the outs at Madrid. More
haven't
so
both of them been god-awful this year?
James, like, doesn't play. Isco's been fine-ish.
What happened to James? Not to derail this too much, but...
I mean, he's just not Bale or Ronaldo.
Yeah.
But he's just... he's not getting sub-minutes? Like, I mean...
He's getting some sub-minutes, but Zidane doesn't want to play five forwards. Zidane wants to play, a really boring team that happens to have the best players in the world on it. And so he's not going to like find a way to fit James into when he's already got a front line
with Ronaldo and Benzema and Bale. He's not going to do that. He's going to play a real midfield behind them. So right. the space isn't really there for him because the team isn't being run on the theory of just fit all the right players in.
Right. And like Ramos is not the same kind of player as like Bale and Ronaldo. He's a kind of a weird attacking midfielder. You know, he doesn't strictly fit the formation. You know, with Bale being out for the season, there was kind of like the hope that he would get a shot, and that doesn't look like it's going to happen. So yeah, I would take Hamas if that's that's the thing. I would take Isco.
Do it, Levy. You would take. I mean, would you really take Isco if you could get him for like I don't know what? What do you think the going fee is? 20, 30 million?
Yeah, I think Isco's a really good player, and I think you know.
I'd rather have him than Sissoko, but I don't know, man. Like,
you know, when we talk about. It's annoying because like we talk about our team being like creatively bankrupt. You know, there's so much pressure on Eriksen to make every attack work. And like, you know, no team just has one guy who does that the way we do. And so having a guy like Isco who you can play with Eriksen, you know, theoretically, would certainly take a lot of pressure off of the need for our press or a Christian Eriksen moment of magic to be our chance creator. Like that's what he would give you. So a player like that, like an actual creative attacking midfielder, sounds great to me in theory, but you know, he doesn't strike me as a Pochettino kind of guy, like, and that's kind of like the hard problem with the way we play and like kind of what we need is like, you know, you want more guys like Christian Eriksen who are phenomenal pressers and phenomenal at like springing those quick counters after winning the ball back. And also guys who can create in deep possession and sustain possession. And that is a really hard marriage. Like a lot of those, you know, players are, you know, they're described as like, you know, the kind of luxury attacking midfielder, like the Mesut Ozils of the world who you don't expect to work super hard. You know, like it's hard to find somebody who does both. I have no idea. I don't know. Yeah, we should buy somebody because Sissoko sucks, but... I don't know who that somebody is.
Be Sandro, right? Just go get Sandro back.
Yeah, we should get Sandro back.
How about old Saito Bifarino?
No.
I mean, he might only cost like $5 million now.
I mean, Berahino.
He's got what, like 6 months left on his contract at this point?
Yeah, but the thing about Berahino is like he's a reclamation project. He's not like the guy you get in January to fix your team. Like he's like a Dele Alli kind of. You get him and you're
you think Spurs have their work cut out with Jansen? Like, good lord.
No, I mean just like I mean our problem. I mean right now we were chasing a game, and the debate that you guys had for 10 minutes was that we should have brought on Moussa Sissoko or George Kevin Nkudu, like. Or maybe we should have had Josh Onuma on the bench. Like we have injuries to Jansen and Lamella, and we don't have any real goal threats at all.
I actually kind of miss Nasser Chadli. I never thought I'd say that. Like,
shut your mouth.
Look, West
maybe you could count on him to score a goal. Chadli.
But, like, I mean, West Brom has benched Nasser Chadli. So, like, let's, like, take a step back real quick.
I think Nasser Chadli's been hurt.
And, again, like, the problem against Manchester United was not that we didn't have people who could score goals. It's that we weren't creating opportunities to score goals. So how does Nasser Chadli fix that? He doesn't.
I mean, he's amazing. Do you remember that goal against Braga?
Shut up.
I mean, runs can create chances to score goals, too. I agree that we lacked everything, but, like, Moussa Sissoko and Kudu at this point in their careers are water carriers. Like they're not going to do any of the things that lead to goals unless maybe they break the defense down and something happens in that broken down moment. Like someone who can do some of the things that lead directly to goals would be very useful for our team on the bench.
We should sign that goals guy.
Really yeah, but I mean, again, it's like you're talking about a game where you have Heung-Min Son and Dele Alli on the field. You know, the issue isn't guys who can score goals. It's guys who can make goals.
Well, but no, I mean, they were bad this game. Michael. I mean, look at our bench. That is an unacceptable bench for a team with Spurs with Spurs ambitions.
I agree completely. But it's the question isn't acceptable. It's how do you fix it?
By buying a guy who can do things that are better than George Kevin Nkudu.
Right, but one of those things. That's my argument.
But I mean, that bench looks a lot different if Eric Lamella and Vincent Janssen are healthy.
Right. I'm saying we're two injuries away from having no bench.
Right. So, Michael, my question for you is not, do we need a bench? Obviously, it's what kind of player do you want on the bench? And I'm saying I want a guy who can help shoulder the creative burden so our guys like Sun and Ali and Kane can score. And you seem to be saying a guy who is Nassir Chadli.
But we have Tom Carroll, so what do we need your thing for?
I mean, I think that a creative player would be great, but if there are injuries, if we had Lamella, we would. I think any of those would be great. I don't. It doesn't matter to me. I'm not as worried about the specific characteristic of that attacking player, so long as they offer more than wingers with no end product.
It's all a moot point though, because we're not doing anything or signing anyone. So
yeah, and that won't be the worst thing either. That'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, best case scenario, we sign another Dele Alli, who we'll see next year. Like nobody is coming in to solve our problems for the rest of the season.
Victor Wanyama might.
Unlikely.
Unlikely.
Don't know what that even means.
I don't know what you guys are complaining about. We have made the greatest signing in club history, if not English history.
Oh, my God. Michael.
Football history.
Michael, why do you have to be bad? We try so hard on this podcast sometimes. All right. Let's take some questions from our listeners to wrap up this blogcast. Noted rapscallion Vince and occasional podcast guest wants to know what was Victor Wanyama actually aiming at when he missed on Sunday? Brian?
I mean, I can't be sure. I can only assume that someone was cooking spaghetti in the general vicinity of
Italy, yeah. Is that what you think?
It must have been. It wasn't the goal, that's for damn sure.
Ben, any thoughts on what Victor was aiming for?
I mean, I said before, I think he was aiming for the ground, and I think he hit it, and we should give him full credit for that.
Michael, what do you think he was aiming for?
I mean, it's hard to swing your head at a ball that's moving. I mean, give the man credit. He looked like a complete ass, but he was aiming for the goal.
You don't think he was aiming for another English signing who was worse than him? Because they're all beneath him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, see what I did there?
Okay. That he really couldn't have missed, right?
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
Well, unless he skied it over the bar.
Yeah.
Which his signing has done.
Touche. Any other questions?
Yeah, I was thinking about how to deal with this one. So this comes from a guy named Will Dory. He wants to know if we're going to move into a cursed stadium like Arsenal and West Ham when we get our new stadium. And I want to alter this question a little bit. Ben, I want to start with you. Are you worried what the atmosphere is going to be like at our new stadium after we move in? Because, lots of people, the problems with the Olympic Stadium are obvious. Everyone talks about how like quiet the Emirates is, but it's not like, Highbury wasn't as bad. It's not like Arsenal fans haven't had this reputation before. So
what? Highbury wasn't bad. There's a reason they called it the library. Like, yeah,
exactly.
It was bad.
Exactly. My point, it was never great. So my point is like Spurs have, no. I mean, you, we
the
repeatedly
stadium
heard
is not
about
a problem.
Okay. No. Cause we've repeatedly bad heard stuff. About they're trying to get everyone close to the pitch. They're trying to create like a big Dortmund style wall.
Yeah, and that all seems to be happening. So I don't know what the concern is. Like, we don't have a running track. Like, we made noise at Wembley, which is much bigger and much more removed from the atmosphere or much removed from the action. There's zero concern that the stadium will be a problem because our fans are mostly not pieces of shit. We're not going to be West Ham fans having riots in the stadium. We're not going to be Arsenal fans on our iPads. It's a dumb question.
Do you think that...
Shame on you, Will.
You don't think that the suits of all the NFL executives that will be pitch side for every game will absorb all the sound?
Yeah, I mean, they are soundproof. That is a fact. I mean, no, the biggest thing is, like, to the extent that, like, they don't keep, supporter sections together and, like, people who know each other where they sit. If that's broken up. Like, it will take time to forge those same, like, fan connections in the grounds, but I'm not actually worried about it, you know.
England doesn't have, like, that supporter group called, I mean, aside from, you know.
Right, it's just like you know,
Crystal
you go to
Palace.
Right, it's just that, you know, people have sat in these, you know, season ticket seats for decades, and they all know their neighbors, and, you know, they sing together, and that's a comfortable atmosphere and whatever, and if that's broken up, like, yeah, that might be a little difficult to get back to, but, like, it's not an actual problem.
So, speaking of problems, this question comes from JC. Michael, do you think that qualifying for the Europa League hurts us in the Premier League?
It probably does somewhat. You know, more games, more minutes. I think that the question is, how do you balance the good against the bad, and quantifying exactly how much being in Europe hurts is a very difficult question. All of the studies suggest there's some amount of loss. The question is, what is how do you weigh that against the possibility of, you know, winning a trophy, glorious Europe games, whatever, however you value that, and the possibility of making the Champions League. It's an issue of trade-offs. There's no question that it can hurt.
Well, and I guess the weird thing about the Europa League is there's always that weird question of how seriously do you want to take it? Because, you know, you're probably going to take it more seriously if you're drawing a team like Inter Milan than you even today, than, you know, if you get a weird Belgish team like we just did. I mean, my guess is you're going to see more rotation in that game than you would otherwise. So hopefully, I mean, a lot of it's going to depend on who you're drawing, and, you know, we'll see. We got a favorable draw in the first Europa League game. Did we get Ghent or Genk?
Ghent.
Okay, good to know. Because Cliff Taurus wants to know, did you guys know Ghent and Genk are different? And I did. I just can't remember which is which. So,
yes, we have the racist one. I hate doing this because I do it all the time, but take the Europa League seriously. You know, if this match didn't teach us anything, it's that top four is going to be very difficult for us this season. You know, we had the opportunity to move into fourth place. We didn't take it. You know, we're a little bit adrift from the teams ahead of us anyway. Having a second road into the Champions League is a good thing. Winning a trophy is a good thing.
Yeah, we have Europa League seriously. Realistically, I mean, Spurs aren't going to win the league this year. I think unless something really changes, that's not going to happen this year. So if we're not in the Europa League, we have one other opportunity at this point to win silverware this year. And I don't know about you guys, I would like to win a trophy. It would be very nice. And if that's the Europa League, that's one thing. If that's the, you know, if that's the FA Cup, that'd be great too. But, you know, these are two trophies we could win, and it would be really nice to win a trophy. And the fact that we might qualify for the Champions League is gravy. So let's do it. It'll be good. Next question comes from Reno Wallabout, who wants to know, where is Eric Dier going to hide the bodies?
Whose bodies?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Are you trying to develop a bit, like, on the fly here?
I'm not developing a bit. I'm just asked this question. I figured I'd see where it would go. That's how it goes on Wheeler Dealer Radio.
I'm not making any statements. I'm just asking questions.
Exactly.
Is that where we are?
I'm just asking questions. How do we know that Eric Dier didn't start because jet fuel melted his bones? How do we
I was going to say that jet fuel obviously can't melt the bond that Dele Alli and Eric Dier have.
Victor Wanyama, you know, might.
I think if Eric Dier had started, he would have buried at least one body beneath Old Trafford, but Ander Herrera got off lucky.
Ander Herrera is, I believe, our esteemed Brett Rainbow made a very good point during the game that Ander Herrera is that type of player like David Silva, who's like a really shitty, dirty player, but because he's like a tiny little Spaniard, no one ever notices.
Yeah, he's a piece of shit. That's why Eric Dier declared, you know, a blood feud against him. And Pochettino, like an ass, didn't give him the opportunity.
Okay, so I'm curious of all your opinions on this. Do we think that had anything to do with why Dier got benched? Like, he didn't want to attempt the ref. He didn't want... I'm curious.
Find that a bigger indictment of Pochettino's managerial skills than anything. Like, you have a man who has literally declared war on one of the opponent's really good midfielders. Like, you let him go to the mattresses. Shame on you, Pochettino. Shame on you.
Anyone else? Anyone else want to jump in on this while we have the chance?
Nope.
There's no dissenting opinion because this is correct.
Okay,
fair. Pochettino let Mad Dog Dyer off the leash to kill Ander Herrera.
So we have one last question. This comes from Haley Bachrock, and I think it's very pertinent.
Can I interrupt real quickly?
Yeah.
But is it just me, or do we have the same three people ask us questions every week?
Well, same three people give us good questions every week. How about that?
Okay. All right. I thought that was the issue. All right. Continue.
Yeah. She wants to know.
Greg, like Pochettino, plays favorites, and
hey, it works. It works. It gets results, even if it's not getting results right now. Yeah, so she wants to know, is Moussa Dembele a Slytherin for poking Costa in the eye, or a Hufflepuff because he's such a dad?
I mean, he's, like, if anyone is a Slytherin in this scenario, it's obviously Diego Costa. He's, like, the world's biggest shitbag. He manipulates referees and opposition players to do his bidding on the regular. Dembele, for poking him in the eye, is the heir of Godric Gryffindor, surely. He's the only one with the courage to stand up to this absolute monster.
That's the one weak point in his body, is the eye.
Right. Did you not see Harry in the Basilisk? That is where he derives his power. Mm-hmm. So that was a bit from Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, the second book in the Harry Potter franchise.
Franchise.
It's good giving backstory on his obscure works of art.
Well, you know, that's the thing. Like, usually our bits are so easy to understand. It's important that when we have a weird bit that people might not have heard of, that, you know, we make sure they're all clued in on that. So thanks, Ben. That's good work.
Yeah.
And on that note, I think it's time to wrap it up for the thing. Does anyone have any other hot Harry Potter takes to add to this?
Yeah. So Hogwarts is like this wizard academy, okay, right?
Yeah.
And Harry Potter, his parents died under mysterious circumstances.
Is that where Ryan Mason's from?
Is Harry Potter the Ryan Mason of the wizarding world?
Yes.
Ooh.
I feel like he gets lots of credit. Doesn't actually do anything. Like, he is.
Yeah, can we recast Harry Potter from the...
No, players? Jesus Christ, I refuse. On that note, for Ben Daniels, for Michael Cayley, for Brian, I am Skipjack. Come on, you Spurs. Hopefully it's a better game that we can talk about next week.